If you don't know who I am, my name is James Pogue, and I'm the Executive Director of Homeless Services at Comprehensive Life Resources. And feel free to go to pchomeless.org, and you can see all of the links and all of the agendas and all of the upcoming events. So Delia, you're here today, who has been a good partner of mine, specifically for Metro Parks at the People's Center, as our young adult shelter doesn't actually have showers, and People's Center has been a great partner for us over the last year, addressing our shower needs, even during the pandemic, still working with us while they're closed. So I really want to thank you and Metro Parks for that. And then,
good morning. Thank you so much for allowing us this opportunity. And it has been our pleasure to work with Comprehensive Life Resources and offer that opportunity for the young adults. We're hoping that we continue collaborating with future programs and opportunities for those people who experience homelessness. We have a lot of respect for the work that you do, and we like to support it any way that we can. So thank you. With me today is Courtney Acuff and Abigail Bizarra Perez. They're part of the outreach team for Metro Parks, and Metro Parks is right now going through the process of doing our budget process. And the task that we have been given is to make sure that those voices of communities of focus have been represented. So that we are presenting here to this group with the hopes that we have opportunities to collaborate to ensure that the people who experience homelessness, their voice are heard and represented in this budget process. Courtney has a small presentation to share with you guys, and then we'll open the floor for any questions. I'll hand it over to my colleague, Courtney. Thank you.
Thank you, Delia. Good morning, everyone. Happy Friday. We made it through another week. So excited. I know a lot of parents are on the screen with kids at home, Tacoma Public Schools online, and it was a rough one for me, but I'm still standing, and I'm excited about this work, and I'm excited to share this work with you all. I have a very small presentation just to kind of show you guys and give you a visual of what our team's goal is, but I think Delia said it best. Our main goal right now is collaboration and making sure that these communities of focus are heard. So help us better serve you is our focus right now. Your parks, your voice is the term and slogan that we will be using for our 2021-22 budget. Our main focus right now, again, is to get these underserved, underrepresented, and communities of focus voice heard. So your voice matters. What we need right now is your help in reaching these communities. However we can collaborate, again, we're willing to hear you out and see what makes the most sense for these communities. Our survey is a two-step process. So it's a brief survey through SurveyMonkey, about 12 questions that we're asking input for. And then the second tool is an interactive tool through Balance and Act, very similar to the city's budget process, but it will allow you to demonstrate how we fund parks and recreation, operations through zoological practices as well. And you'll be asked to make necessary reductions or reinvest your resources to meet the changes that our community needs, especially with COVID-19 right now. We do understand that there is a lot of changes. There's a lot of barriers, and there's a lot of things that individuals don't have access to. And so we're trying to bridge that gap through our 2021-22 budget development process. Our first process was developing the strategy, just kind of understanding again where we are in the middle of COVID-19 and understanding the barriers and the challenges that our community is facing. And then we went into strategic actions and engagement, which where you would come into play. I'm really trying to engage and find these strategic actions that make the most sense for collaboration and partnership. And then our third and final product through this team would be reporting the impacts of survey results, making sure that we hold Metro Parks accountable for follow-up with the community once our budget is finalized. Budget development strategy is maintaining, nurturing, and developing the relationships inclusively by collaborating with broader community base, helping Metro Parks create a budget that takes all community needs into account, and then ensuring that all community voices are heard. I know that we keep mentioning communities of focus, but we really want to be inclusive and ensure that all of our communities are heard. Our main focus right now is driving survey participation. My teammates will drop the survey link inside of the chat once we get a little further into the presentation, but then also realizing that we have to understand that there are impacts of COVID-19 and the civil unrest to racial inequalities that are playing effect into a lot of where people are today. And so understanding that not everyone has access and that participation in the survey may be a little bit difficult for others. Strategic actions and engagement right now would be where also you would come into play, collaborating with anchor organizations and then reaching external organizations and engaging with the community by providing information sessions, listening sessions, workshop, whatever makes the most sense for your community and or your audience. We're willing to adapt certain strategies to ensure that your voices, your community's voices are heard by what their needs are. And then listening to identify their barriers and challenges and opportunities, again, to adapt the survey as needed. Reporting the impacts of survey results will be to facilitate information sessions regarding what our next step of budget approval process is. And then for our team to develop ongoing material for ongoing engagement for overall collaboration. So we don't want it to just end here. We do want to ensure that we continue this follow-up process, that once our budget is done, we can continue to hear community voices and continue to help reflect that in our programming and our services. So providing follow-up accountability by reporting back to the community on the process and the overall budget development that is created once executive and board finalizes that. And then creation of community equity committees and Metro Parks Tacoma Equity Advisory Council committees is something that we are still in the works of. We don't have a lot of information on what that would look like right now, but we do know that we've had a lot of discussion within our team, and we really want to make sure that Metro Parks does have an equitable approach and that we have equitable and diverse and inclusive voices heard during during our processes when it comes to making decisions. And then adjustment to budget considerations, your voice, your dollar, so how your voice is impacted by the dollar. Budget development goals is to evaluate our programs and create an equitable budget for all, and then to identify opportunities to reprioritize where our existing programs and services are to better meet our community's needs, especially during COVID recovery phases. We do understand that program priorities will have to shift based on where we are at throughout this pandemic. So just being transparent and realizing that not only is this the middle of a pandemic, but this is also the middle of a lot of racial injustice. And so just kind of understanding what all communities' needs will be. And then to evaluate program services, make sure that it is equitably distributed. We have a lot of different communities that have a lot of different needs. And so we're really trying to hold Metro Parks accountable to understand that we really have to focus on the results that matter most to the communities of focus. Below is the link to participate in our survey. Delia or Abigail will drop this link inside of the chat. Please feel free to go to that link. It will take you directly to our page for the survey. It is also available in 6 different languages. So if there are language barriers, please feel free to use those tools that are there for you. And then also we're encouraging all partners or anyone that would like to share our survey on social media, on their page, whatever makes the most sense for your organization and or yourself. There are social media post links below. Feel free to go to our Facebook, our Twitter, and or our Instagram to share and repost. And then please don't forget to tag us so that we can ensure that our community is working with us and appreciate and show love to the ones that are tagging us and sharing the work that we're doing right now. And then last but not least, our team's contact information, myself, Courtney Acoff, Abigail Viscara Perez, and Delia Flores, all of our phone numbers and emails are in here. If there's any opportunities for collaboration, we're looking to host listening sessions, provide information sessions, workshops, whatever makes the most sense, again, for your audience. Please feel free to reach out. We're open all day for calls and emails, and we're really looking forward to partnering with you all. Thank you again. This is work, legacy work that we really feel this can be legacy work for our district and for our community. What now? What better time than now for Metro Parks to really take advantage of listening to what community needs are? We're really, really passionate about the work. And if there's, again, anything that you can do or we can do to better assist you and to better assist us, please let us know. Thank you again for your time today, and we really appreciate it.
We really appreciate that you are coming and talking with us, and to also say that we are a varied group of people. So when I just took a look at the survey, and some of the questions are these things important to you? What I didn't find is the nuance with these things are important to me, but this is what I think the park should be doing. So there wasn't a choice. If I said it was unimportant to me, that wouldn't be true. If I said I think that's where the park should be putting the funds that we've reserved for public green space, there was no way for me to say that. So I just, and that is how I feel. I feel that especially in poor communities, we absolutely need the green space. We absolutely need the focus of the parks on supporting the community. And I think there are ways the parks can support people experiencing homelessness that don't mean that we no longer have parks.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. We're taking notes right now, just so everyone knows, we will report this information back to our executive team. We do understand that some of the questions can be very challenging and they don't really give you the option to answer to what your needs are. We are trying to adapt that survey so that our communities of focus, which are individuals experiencing homelessness, individuals who don't have access, disabilities, youth. We're really, really trying to adapt the survey as we get more feedback from the community. So thank you so much, Teresa, for that information. I believe Abigail is taking notes, and we will definitely take your input into consideration.
The thing that we cannot stress enough is that we are reliant on comments like Teresa's and on your support in gaining access to populations that, frankly, we haven't earned the trust. And so we really are so appreciative of your time and energy in this, because this is a really different effort than we've ever made before. And so when you request access to the PowerPoint, I want you to know you also have access to us to a degree. I mean, as our capacity allows, there are only three of us on this project, but we're really looking to partner with the health department and Pierce Conservation District and the city of Tacoma and the public schools so that we can kind of do more. And we would love to work with you guys in any way that you have for us to help. If you need support for presenting the PowerPoint, or if you want us to provide even more information, there was a request for information about the impact of COVID-19 on our budget process. And there's a separate PowerPoint for that that we could walk you through if you'd like that. Just let us know what you need in order to serve your constituents, because Teresa's right. The questions are limited in their scope, but we want to hear beyond and outside of the boxes. Thank you so much.
And just one more thing to add. Right now, the survey is on a digital format, but if you have opportunities for us to go in and provide the survey on a paper form, or for us to partner with anybody who's doing an outreach, and opportunities for us to take iPads or anything like that for your clients to take the survey, please don't hesitate to reach out to us. We want to make sure that their voices are heard and represented in this process.
One final thought, thank you. I look back last year on the relationship with Metro Parks over the code changes, and this is like working with an entirely different organization. People who were part of that conversation last year might remember that the leadership of Metro Parks didn't know that we existed as a coalition. And so then Mary Anderson, I think, began attending. At one point, the Metro Park CEO was at a meeting, one of our meetings. I mean, it's an entirely different relationship. And it's just, so please, thank you, the three of you on this project. Please, convey this to your leadership, because it's a huge change.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It looks like we do have another question. Go ahead, Al, last one.
I always get last. How do I do that? I had a thought about a kind of a program that might fit what you guys generally do for the public, and that would be to develop a camping program for homeless families who have no place to live in one of the parks, with park personnel providing support and supervision, and the rest of us doing that. How about a sort of an urban creative initiative of that kind?
Really good idea, Al. I know that executive is in discussion on what we can do for the home individuals experience in homelessness, especially within our parks. Again, our team is definitely taking notes, and thank you guys so much for the feedback today. We will definitely be taking this back to our executive team with hopes that they will address the questions that you guys are having and or give us answers so that we can be sure to follow up with you all with answers.
We would like to hear back from them after they have made their decision.
Absolutely.
We're also attending different coalitions that we've been hearing from Comprehensive Life Resources and Metropolitan Development Council. Some of you are here on this meeting too. And so we're working to help out with, like you said, displaced families. The numbers of children who are part of that population are staggering, mind-blowing. And so that's why we're choosing the partners we're choosing to extend our reach. Thanks, Al.
Awesome. And thank you guys so much. Thank you for both the conversation and the questions. And if Safe Parking Task Force hasn't reached out to you already, I hope they do as well to discuss what might be available for some of the facilities that you have that have parking lots that aren't fully open and operational during COVID. It might be a good partnership if it hasn't already connected yet. So Jan, I know you're here. If you're listening to me, make sure you make that connection if you haven't already. And with that said, I'm going to take the last word so I can transition to our next topic. I am excited to introduce Pierce Transit and their new grant that they've put together that offers nonprofits both reduced and free bus passes for some of the consumers. And so I won't say any more, but Penny, if you're here, I saw your name earlier. Take it away, Penny. There you are.
Thanks. Hi, everyone. I see some familiar names and faces here on the grid of participants. I saw Sherry from Vallejo there. That reminded me, one of the things I do at Pierce Transit is run the Caravan program. And that's a program some of you might be familiar with, where we take surplus van pool vehicles and award them to nonprofits in Pierce County to use with clients. I did want to let folks know that program has had to be put on pause for the moment due to COVID. We aren't buying new vehicles at this time, and so that means we're not surplusing old vehicles. We're kind of keeping them in service as long as we can. So I do hope that program comes back in the new year, because we've had some great stories from folks who've received vans. So stay tuned if that was something you had on your plan for the future. What I'm here to talk to you about today is our Human Service Agency PASS program. Some folks here may already take part in this. Others may have heard of it and are considering, and it might be new to some of you. So basically what Pierce Transit does in usual times is provide all day passes and one ride tickets to nonprofits to give to their clients. And those are available at 50% off the retail price. There's a little process to go through just to certify with us that you are indeed a nonprofit and are giving these passes and tickets to clientele to get them where they need to go. But what we did recently was applied to the Washington State Department of Transportation for some funds and received them. That allows us to give away at no charge 72,000 all-day passes. Those are all ages passes to use on Pierce Transit local bus service. So we have those now, and we're in the process of distributing them. What I wanted to do was show you the steps you go through to get certified and to order the passes. Now, with one caveat, we are redesigning the page so it's a little easier to use. Some of our online forms are somewhat outdated. And so I just learned a new tool called Jot Forms, which is a wonderful free way to create a kind of online form. So that will be posted in the next week or two. So what I'm showing you today is kind of the somewhat clunky version, but it still gets you where you need to go. All right, so what you should be seeing is the Pierce Transit website. I'll put a link in the chat after I'm finished that takes you directly to the page that you'll need. So when you're on the PierceTransit.org website, you'll go over to the little tab called Fares and all the way down to Passes. And then there's different kinds of passes here, but what you want to look for is Pierce Transit tickets and all day passes, and you'll see certified human service agencies here. So you click on order today, and here we are with our little clunky form. This is the page where you actually order the passes that you need. If you have not yet done the certification process, you'll need to do that first. And there's a link up here that says download a form. I've taken the liberty of pulling it up here. So it's fairly simple. Again, this we'll be converting it to an online form, but right now it's a PDF that you fill in and print out. So it just asks about your organization, what kinds of services you provide. We just want to make sure that applicants are 501c3 organizations and that they provide some kind of service to clientele. And so you'll fill out a little information there and sign it. And then right now, send it in, but soon to be an online submittal. So once our marketing assistant, Denise, confirms your certification, you'll come back to this page whenever you need to order passes, and you'll fill in information here. And then there are all different kinds of passes that are available. These are the passes that I mentioned earlier, where you can buy them at 50% off. But what you're going to do for the free passes is scroll down and you'll see this icon here, Pierce Transit All Day Pass, all ages. And this is the grant funded all day pass, no cost for verified 501c3 organizations. So this is where you want to enter your quantity and order those passes. Like I said, we have 72,000 of these to give away. I know they're probably gonna go like hotcakes because it's a pretty good deal. Right now, we're working with 140 different nonprofits in Pierce County, but we hope with this grant to increase that up to about 400 partners, because it seems that each day we run this program, we hear about folks who don't know that this is available. So our ultimate goal is to expand access to transit for populations that need it and to boost enrollment in this Human Service Agency PASS program, because we know transportation is a big challenge for a lot of different people in our community, especially now. When you order, we recommend you order the amount that would be useful for clients for a 30-day time period. We do get a lot of people asking, well, geez, how many should I order? You know, but think about what your clientele or your program participants would need for 30 days, and that's the quantity you probably want to start with. The reason we suggest that instead of like a year's worth is because the all day passes, I think they have an expiration date that's a couple years out. And sometimes when we do bulk passes and that, some people find they still have some left in the desk drawer and they've expired and someone else could have put those to use. So we just want everyone to think about the 30 day number of passes that you could use. So those passes again can be used by all ages. They're an all-day pass, so you get on the bus in the morning, you scan the card with the driver, and then you can use it all day. And then they are good on Pierce Transit local service, so they wouldn't work on Sound Transit going up to Seattle, for example, on one of the express buses or the Sounder train. But anything within our local routing is applicable with these tickets. We also have our new runner service, which you might not have heard of, which is an on-demand service taking people from downtown and Tacoma Dome Station all the way along Reston Way and Dock Street up to Pearl Street near the entrance of Point Defiance Park. So if people maybe have job opportunities at one of the restaurants or businesses along Reston Way, or just want to go down there for recreation or shopping or to go to the farmers market, the runner service is now active to provide connection to that area. And that's available through, you schedule a ride through an app or a telephone number. So there's no routes, no bus stops, no schedule. It's just an on-demand service every day of the week between 7 in the morning and 10 at night. I think that's probably it. It's fairly straightforward. Just remember, if you haven't used the Human Service Agency Pass before, do the certification step first and then you'll be ready to make your orders as needed. Thank you.
It's really a comment. I just want to say that Denise Downs is a real treasure. She's always been really easy to work with and very helpful when you're working through things. So thank you for coming and thank you for hiring good.
Oh yeah, I'll tell Denise that. She has been very busy the last few months having this grant program in order. So we're pleased to have her working on it.
I do see a question in the chat. Alan asking Penny, what are the COVID protections on buses these days?
Oh yeah, good question. Early on in the pandemic, there was some kind of depressing news about safety on board transit, subways, buses, things like that. But actually, the research has shown that riding on board with precautions taken is a fairly safe way to get around. So what we're doing at Pierce Transit is, if some of you had been using the bus or working with people that did early on in the pandemic, we stopped charging fares because we were not wanting people to board at the front of the bus because of the close proximity to the driver. We want to keep riders safe as well as our staff. So we had people boarding by the back door and not paying fare because there's no little cash box at the back. So now we have fares back in effect because we have created a health barrier on all of our buses. So it's a plastic curtain or little swinging door that encloses the driver. So people can feel safe getting on and off and passing close by the driver. Everybody has to wear masks when they're on board. This includes our staff and all riders. We do now on each bus have a disposable mask dispenser. So if someone has forgotten a mask or doesn't have a mask handy, they will be asked to grab one of those in order to ride. The seats are marked off so that social distancing can be maintained. And then we also have staff at all of our transit centers. As the buses move through the system throughout the day, they are cleaned every 2 hours, and then at night they have a deep cleaning. So the cleanings that occur every 2 hours include spraying an antiviral solution on all the high touch surfaces, seats, grab bars, poles that people hang on, just to make sure that all of the surfaces are as clean as possible for riders. So those are the things that we've been doing over the last few months to ensure that people who need to use the bus can do so, you know, in a safe and healthy way.
And then one more comment in chat from Paula Anderson is that this program has been a lifesaver for New Hope out in Puyallup, and Denise is wonderful to work with. So.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much, Penny, for coming and sharing this info for us or with us. And if you already, I think we learned that if you already were registered getting the half off bus tickets, your nonprofit's already registered and all you have to do is go and take a couple more steps to order the free one. So if you're already getting half price ones, take a couple steps and you can get some free ones. And next we have landlord liaison programs.
Hi, good morning, everyone. This is Tina McLeod. I'm the program manager at Landlord Liaison Program. I think what I'll do is I'll just give you a couple bullet points, and then maybe in another month we can make sure we have a formal presentation. Landlord Liaison Program, just as a reminder of how we connect with the homelessness system in Pierce County, is that the Landlord Liaison Program builds relationships with area housing providers, who we call property partners, and they enter into an agreement with LLP to offer units at fair market rent or below, and also with amended screening criteria. And currently, then, we partner with service providers, specifically Rapid Rehousing is the focus area right now. And our Rapid Rehousing caseworkers can then access the housing bank and connect the clients who are community members who are currently experiencing homelessness, connect them to these available units that, again, have the amended screening criteria, as well as the ideal is below fair market rent, but no higher than fair market rent on those units. So I've been here for 2 months. couple of things we're going to be doing. So you know, we're going to be mapping where our current property partners are when we look at Pierce County, and looking at where we have deficits, and we know we have that. And so that we can be expanding where these units are located, and ideally finding more units or recruiting more landlords for units in higher opportunity areas near grocery stores, on the bus lines, in all of our school districts here in Pierce County, in order to not just broaden the availability, but where all these units are located throughout the county. And we are kind of embarking on our own assessment of our own program and the different aspects of it, specifically looking at it through a racial equity lens and seeing how we can improve the work we do and make sure that racial equity is embedded into all aspects of the landlord liaison program. And then I'll just give a plug for the one essentially direct service that we do to community at large is our education series, renters readiness certification classes. And those are the first three Fridays of the month. And one class is on accessing community resources, and VADIS presents that. And then this week on the second Friday of the month is financial capabilities, and Sound Outreach presents that. And the third Friday of the month is landlord-tenant rights and responsibilities. And one of our property partners, Mark Melsness from Spinnaker Property Management, currently presents that. And we're also undergoing an assessment all of those pieces, because we know there's things missing in the classes. So we're going to be looking at what new curriculum will look like for 2021. One, on the renter's readiness, please encourage anyone you're working with, community members, your staff, to attend and gather more information. I know specifically the landlord tenant rights and responsibilities piece is very popular. They're free, they're currently still on Zoom, and we're trying to work out some options to lower that barrier for people who don't have access. We're still trying to figure out what that looks like. Possibly offering for two or three people with face coverings in our conference room to watch it in that location. So we're still working on what that will look like. So hopefully for next month, we'll have something ready for that. So there's my bullet points. And I just want to just say that we're really glad to be back in this space. This is intentional. We have three of our staff. I'm trying to be here on the first and second Fridays, another staff member on the third Friday, and then Tony on normally the fourth, and if there's ever a fifth Friday. So we think it's really important for us to be in this space. And so I just kind of also want to put that out there. It's really great to see all of you and to be here on a regular basis.
Teresa.
It's really good to see you, Tina. I just wonder about how formerly incarcerated people are, is your new format for application, has that been taken into account already? And do you have a model of the differences that you could send out so we could look at what you're doing?
I appreciate you bringing that up. I'm just starting to look at all those aspects. As you know, our housing units and our housing bank aren't open to the general public. It's specifically between our landlords and our service providers, which it's my understanding in the future, there's interest in opening that up beyond rapid rehousing. So we are looking at the amended screening criteria. Basically, each new property partner or landlord lets us know what they're willing to do. But I think I'm going to write this down right now. In regards to specifically formerly incarcerated community members, because I know many of them are willing to work with people with criminal histories, but I haven't specifically, since I've gotten here, asked them about that topic. So I'll look into that and follow up.
If there's ever an opportunity to have someone come in and pitch the idea of case by case and how some other places have managed it, please call on New Connections.
Definitely. Thank you.
To echo everyone else, thank you so much. And if we have additional questions or if in the future we want to have a full presentation with slideshows and everything, we can give you more time. So with that, I'm going to hand off to Maureen to talk out and set the table for our breakout sessions to look at some recommendations that the coalition may be trying to hammer out for the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. So Maureen.
And Maureen, before you get started, just so everybody, I don't know that everybody's seeing the chat. There's some settings in the background for today's meeting that we needed to change. We can't make the change during the meeting. That means we cannot actually do breakout sessions. So I think what we would do is shift to have a more open discussion of what Maureen's going to talk about next. And we'll also do an alternate means to take kind of a vote to move forward or not on the proposal. So apologies ahead of time.
Oh, fun. Okay. All right. It's an imperfect world. We're here. That's the important thing. So thank you. So you should have received, if you're on the listserv, yesterday I sent out a message that said draft of letter to Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. And I just dropped it in the chat all by my very own self, which is a first. So things are looking up with technology. Jan Runbeck, I want you to please weigh in on this conversation. So those of you who were at our Friday meeting, maybe 3 weeks ago, when Jan presented about safe parking, she made a comment that she'd been in a meeting with the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation and that they had asked for the coalition to basically identify emerging needs and also provide a unified voice on homelessness issues. I followed up with Jan to clarify that this was a funders meeting, and Jan wears many hats. One of them is as a funder. And so Pierce County Connected is that pool of money that was put together early on before we even had CARES money, I think, to meet immediate needs. And that money's gone, a lot of it's gone into food and shelter. For a while, Erica Tucci's the senior program officer with the Cheney Foundation was sending out a daily report that included updates on needs and on resources, and different sections got added, childcare, transportation, employment, all that sort of thing. So the intent of that daily report was really to keep the funders advised. And one of the things that I had observed early on was that the food people were pretty well organized on presenting what the food system looked like and where it needed help. And, you know, some of us just think of the food that ends up in the food bank, but there's actually more than one well-organized system behind that distribution. And that the shelter portion was not as well represented, it seemed to me, as even what I knew, even though there were the shelters were meeting every day with the county and then with the city joined in as well. And it just seemed like, you know, there were gaps in what we knew as opposed to what was showing up. So I was really pleased when Jan passed on this information and this invitation. And so rather than start with an entire general conversation, I just invited a few people to a meeting. We had a one-time meeting to talk about how we might frame a response. And so that when it came to the coalition as a discussion, that we had at least a little bit of a framework to work within. And so we did meet, and I did draft something that is in the chat and that you also should have received last night. And it is just that, it's a draft. I followed the format that we had used with the letter of the recommendations on the CARES funding that we had agreed on. And I went back and looked at what was in that letter. I looked at the transcript from the August 28th meeting of the coalition, where the breakout groups reported on a winter shelter plan. And I looked at Manu's new report on the shelters, from the health department, community branch side. And lo and behold, I even looked at my year-old Safe Shelter Task Force proposal to the city of Tacoma, which went nowhere because they said they didn't have time. But so I sent a draft out to the small group, took some comments, cleaned it up a bit. And so that's what you have. Now, nobody is proposing that this coalition make funding recommendations for a specific program or an organization. Rather, that what we came up with was that we ask the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, this Pierce County Connected Fund, which still has money in it, and still their last proposal deadline is September 30th. And then their website indicates that they expect to do another round early in 2021. So we put it in terms of asking them to reserve at least $1 million for a winter shelter program, basically countywide. Bluntly, that nobody dies this winter. This winter is not going to be like any other winter. We've all talked about that. And we can't just add and expect shelters to add people to every available inch. So in the absence of anybody leading this that I'm aware of, and maybe somebody is, maybe the county is leading, maybe there's a group that's leading, and I just don't know. But in that absence, our recommendation is that they take $50,000 or up to $50,000 and actually hire somebody. And we're saying that the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation do that. Hire somebody who's going to take our suggestions and put them into a very simple, straightforward format, calling it a plan for lack of anything else. And this person then is responsible to see that this gets implemented and that it gets presented in such a way that we know what gets done and what doesn't. And if there are reasons we can live with or not, we can work on that later. But and then that the rest of the money be reserved for programs that in fact ensure that people are sheltered in a variety of ways. And I guess my thought is that with some sort of a big tent framework, that individual organizations would go in just like you always do and say, this is what we want to do, but that on this round of funding, that it would go in specifically looking at the probable impact of winter and how we preserve life, especially people who are not sheltered through this winter. And so the more that I looked at the suggestions that had been made and the conversations, I then broke it into like unsheltered, people who are literally unsheltered, people who are sheltered. There are fewer points under that. The staff, especially the frontline staff. I mean, I don't know why we're still seeing people saying they don't have PPE. FEMA can buy that all day long. And then the organizations, are there some organizational issues that need to be addressed to get through the winter? Increasingly, we're learning that the virus can be transmitted through the HVAC systems. And I know that's pretty low on everybody's list of just how you get up in the morning and get through the day. And then the system itself, are there things that need to happen in our entire system that could happen this winter? And then to the extent to which things we learn, things we do, things we learn, that we can carry those, the good ones, the useful ones, the ones that really make a difference on into the future. So that's how this happened. That's what we have. And I don't want to lead this discussion. I want to watch it. So Rob, can you be the leader?
Yeah.
Or you and James or something? I'd actually like James to be able to weigh in because you are a provider. And I know that MDC is a provider, but...
But on a smaller scale.
And however you want to do it. But I don't want to lead this part. I want to watch and listen. Mm-hmm. And so we, yeah. Jan, do you want to add anything before we start? I hope you're there.
No, no, I don't. Maureen, you're a hard act to follow. I will, I'm taking notes. So take it away, James and Rob.
So one thing that I'm not sure we fully covered in the setting the context is also the request on the part of Greater Tacoma Community Foundation that the, whatever is proposed does help address some of the social justice issues that we've seen in the community. So if I missed that while I've been running the meeting, sorry. I just wanted to call that out as well.
Thank you.
But I'm happy. Yeah, I'm happy to kind of help facilitate what's going to be kind of a wild and open discussion. But what I think what we really want to hear from people is if you've had a chance to look at the proposal that Maureen sent out last night, or to download it and look at it now, what pieces do you agree with, disagree with, and what do you think might be missing? And I think rather than, if you're more comfortable putting it in the chat, that's fine. But I think it'd be great to hear people's voices if you can just unmute yourself and ask a question. And I know it'll be a little muddled with this many folks in one big room, but I think we can do it. So any thoughts? James, yes, did you have anything you wanted to add?
The coalition, my understanding, we've not ever presented or rarely present as a unified voice. So there needs to be, before this is submitted, there needs to be folks identified who can actually speak to the foundation about how this plan would work. So we're not a 501c3, we're not a Secretary of State sanctioned a nonprofit or charity. That's another discussion, but there needs, when the foundation comes back with questions, who's going to answer?
Yeah, we will have to determine who those one or two people probably are that can kind of serve as the spokespeople for this plan to advocate for winter shelter. I do think the coalition has in the past taken positions to advocate for issues, and this is very similar, I think. But you're right, we need to have one or two point people for the conversation.
And I think your question is really important, and we'll need to do that. As I understand the proposal, it is not proposing that the coalition itself get any of these monies. It's proposing that organizations that are going to carry out whatever plan is developed will get monies. So yeah. The fact that we're not a 501c3 is not a big issue. Yeah. As long as I'm talking, I'll go ahead and raise my concern about this letter. It tries to cover way too much. And it does not, and beyond, well, first of all, I'm very much in favor of the proposal to do 50,000 and 950,000. I'm absolutely for that. When you get down to that long laundry list below item one, we're just going to confuse people. We have not indicated any priorities. And I frankly think that $950,000 focused on that number one recommendation is where we ought to focus. I think the rest of it should be left off. But whatever is decided by the group, I will support.
Thank you, Al. Teresa?
So I feel differently about that. I think it's really important to provide a context of the whole issue. And so that when people come to apply for grant money, it's not okay, you don't fit under this criteria, so your idea is not supported by the coalition. I think it's actually a great letter that I think we can work with. I agree with Al that it would be good to have some prioritization in it. And I'm not sure how we would do that because of the kind of group we are, but I think that would be a good thing to try. The one piece, first of all, I think if somebody hires someone to do this, they should hire Maureen. That's my pitch. But I also want to say that there's a lot included in there, and this will go against Al too, because I think there's another thing that needs to be included, which is the neighborhoods that are highly impacted. To say we're not going to move anyone along, but we're also not going to focus in some way on the neighborhoods that are now the containment zones for people who are without homes is crazy, because all that does is impoverish everyone in these high impact neighborhoods. So that's a part that has felt missing in the conversations. And I bring it up as someone who has a lot of neighbors who don't have homes, and I care deeply about them. And I also care about my house neighbors who are right now in real crisis because of the way our neighborhood is shaping up.
Teresa, or anybody who's high tech, have the high impact neighborhoods been mapped? Is there a document that anybody has pulled together mapping high impact neighborhoods, already high impacted neighborhoods?
So I can offer a little bit of an answer to that. So just from my familiarity last winter when MDC worked with Associated Ministries and the Tacoma Ministerial Alliance around the topic of creating additional spaces for safe shelter through last winter, Metro Parks actually had at that time mapping that showed places where people had been staying overnight. Now, I don't think it really captured people who were sleeping in their vehicles, but it definitely captured places where people were staying outdoors, literally outdoors throughout the night. And they were able to map it over a time period. So what the map ended up looking like was kind of, it wasn't quite a heat map. It actually had little tents denoted for each area that it had someone staying there. But it shows kind of some of the areas that had seen the largest impacts. So I think it can be done.
The other way that that's often mapped is through 311 calls about encampments. That's not a really accurate way, because people get so discouraged when dialing 311 doesn't really have an impact. So it might look as if things have calmed down when in fact they are maintaining as very difficult.
And I wanted to make sure everybody saw Cynthia's comment in the chat agreeing that we did need to have point people, but we absolutely need to have a plan for shelters this winter. There are not enough now, and there will be an expanded need.
I would just say, as I've been in a lot of the conversations around shelter expansion and what will happen during the winter and how COVID affects our planning, while I think the whole letter itself is great, and I think there's a lot of good points, and there's some information there, but I would, under the creating the additional shelter space under the recommendation, there's a bunch of things in there. There's housing vouchers and safe parking and self-managed tent camps and all of that stuff. I think it would be helpful, if nothing else, to describe that we can't just add more bodies into our existing shelter this year, and this is why we need these alternatives. We need places where people can keep their 6 feet and keep dry and keep warm. And some of them can include weather protected areas where they can self-manage camping, or parking garages where people can park, ideally with a covering, but if not, maybe one of our safe parking team can give the recommendations there. But these are more dire than ever, because every other year, all of the congregate shelter providers would just keep filling to the brim, and none of us can. We've all been to the brim with the COVID protocols all summer long, which is normal, but we can't do anything more because of the COVID protocols this time around, at least in our congregate care spaces.
And just for perspective, James, do you off the top of your head know typically in the winter months how much extra capacity is created in shelters that won't be there this time?
I saw Garrett earlier. He'd probably know exactly. Our shelter specifically goes up just approximately 20-ish beds, which is 40 to 60. Tacoma Rescue Mission, now that's a little bit skewed this year because they do have additional female beds that they don't normally have, so there's already some additional capacity in some Ukraine. And at the same time, they've also reduced their other side to adjust some of the protocols for COVID. But typically, I saw Davina, maybe she would be better at telling you TRM's normal capacity and expanded capacity, but I would say some version of 400 beds, give or take, between the Salvation Army, as well as Freezing Nights in Puyallup is not going to be online, and that's somewhere between 40 and 80 beds a night. The Rescue Mission does something like 40-ish beds back in their regular time. Salvation Army did a couple extra families. And then, again, the Nativity House already had to reduce their already existing capacity for COVID, and they are not going to expand it back up to their normal, and they're not able to take on the extra, which was pretty big. I think they used their whole cafeteria and made something like 60 or 70 extra beds. So you can just hear all those things. Now, there might be the care center that adds a few extra beds in the hotel world. There might be some COVID dollars that came through that have expanded some hotel vouchers. That would be a great question, maybe to circle back with Valerie, who I know is on the call at some point. How many extra beds has COVID produced for us through shelter and stuff? But I would say that just from our typical winter months, we're going to be 400-ish beds down from the congregate shelters. Maybe 300, it might be a high estimate.
Yeah, and I'm sure Valerie could speak to it, but the other challenge, of course, with the CARES Act funding is that much of that runs out at the end of the year. So. And unfortunately, the winter's not over by January 1. So,
I saw Val turn her camera on. I think she wants to speak to it.
Yeah, I can chat about that. So, yes, all the CARES and COVID dollars ends December 31st. So, unfortunately, all of that fund goes with it. Also, most of, if not all of, the CARES and COVID dollars for shelter actually went for social distancing of shelters. So, very few new beds were actually created. They were just expanded to new locations. Helping Hand, there are some locations who received motel and hotel vouchers. I can dig back out through my last 6 months of notes and get a list, but most of those have already spent down all of their dollars. Helping Hand House has vouchers for families over in Eastern Pierce County, but most of those funds were really, really focused on that social physical distancing requirement when COVID first started, as well as maintaining those programs. So unfortunately, not a lot of new beds. If not anything, we still lost some beds.
I just want to add one clarification. We use the money terms. So when Valerie talks about the CARES dollars, she's talking about the relief fund. And same with Rob and others of us. So that's a particular pot. That's the money from the Department of Treasury. That's the money that ends December 31st. There are other monies in the CARES Act, the Emergent ESG and the CDBG. Those monies were increased. They go to certain local jurisdictions. Those monies have a life beyond December 31st. So, and we've not talked about those because everybody's been so focused on making sure that the relief funds get used and used well. So, but we are not totally without money come January 31st. We don't have anywhere near the amount of money that the relief fund provides, but yeah. We are not without money.
Yeah, great background.
I'll also add to that too. As Jeff was here last week and talking about the new shelter application that was due last month, I think around August 21st, that will bring new beds. City of Tacoma was a partner, City of Lakewood, City of University Place, and City of Puyallup. So I'm not an in-depth part of that conversation, but I'll see if there can be an update. You got me this week because either they're on vacation or they're dealing with an emergency. So I'm here. but that's part of what will be creating new beds in City of Tacoma, as well as somewhere in Eastern Pierce County. I don't know the exact location, but I know I've heard several things from in and outside Puyallup, in and outside Fife. And so as soon as I hear more information, I'll ask specifically for this coalition to get an update on what that looks like, as well as we do know there is a second round of ESG dollars coming. And what that process will look like. And so John and Heather were both very clear. They heard the coalition. They know you want input. They know you want lived experience input as well as shelter providers. So that's a part of our planning process. But we are still waiting to hear from the state what that exact amount looks like and what restrictions may or may not come with that. So thank you, Maureen, for bringing those up. Definitely in the plan.
So I'm paying attention a little bit to the clock. We've got about maybe 10 more minutes that we can devote to this conversation. We haven't heard from everybody, obviously, in the room. So why don't we get to do, I would ask those who might have real concerns about the idea of this proposal, if you could speak up now and let us know what concerns you have so we may be able to make adjustments. That would be great.
So this is Jim with LASA, and I've got an echo, so let me try to figure out how to deal with that. I think it's a great idea, but I have to agree with Al. I have to agree with Al that it's a little bit too broad. And the other thing is that I think trying to get something accomplished in this big a group is really difficult. And so what I would suggest is, you know, I hate to put something off, but I would suggest maybe people who would be interested in participating in a further discussion, you know, raise their hands now, so to speak. And I'd be one of those people. So I'm not just trying to put it off. Because if something like this is going to happen, it has to happen quickly. And then the suggestion made by Teresa that Maureen be the one that maybe she doesn't even want to be hired, but maybe she be deputized or hired to do it. That may have been not serious, but I think it's a good one, because anybody to pull this off is going to have to be ready to jump in immediately. They have to know the whole landscape and be able to start going forward. My suggestions are, I think it's a little bit too broad, needs to be focused down a little bit. And to do that, you need fewer people in the room.
Thank you.
I am. I'm Carrie from Hughes, Washington. I haven't been to this call before, so thanks for
having me
today. Thank you. Yeah, it's awesome to hear about all the amazing work going on. For those of you who don't know, Hughes, Washington is a progressive political org in Washington, and a lot of my work is in Pierce County. And my knee-jerk reaction, because it's my work, is to think of this through a political lens. And if there's, I would love to talk more with anybody about candidates that we are supporting and ways we can collaborate to move forward these agendas on a multilateral agenda. So just wanted to say hello and thank you for all your work. We're in this together. Thanks.
Thank you. So Maureen, in terms of process, so I know that originally we had thought about doing a poll to assess the coalition members' willingness to move forward with the proposal as amended with the suggestions in this meeting. Do we think we need to pull together one more small group meeting to make adjustments to the proposal, or time-wise, do we make adjustments and move through a shorter process than that? Not to put you on the spot.
I think my biggest concern is that we have two radically different proposals on the table. One is that we maintain the breadth of this proposal. The other is that we eliminate everything after unsheltered. That's a big deal. And I know we can't poll, but what if we used raised hand? So I think that's one question then, a sense of the group on, do we leave the breadth of the proposal or do we restrict to unsheltered only? The other question
was not a yes or no question.
Well, it can be posed as yes or no. Rob will figure that out. The second one is just in terms of being able to move forward. But whoever's going to take this forward has to have that information. The second one is a sense of the group on, do you want another small group meeting? Or not. And the third is the time limit. The round is September 30th. The Greater Tacoma Round 3 deadline is September 30th. We're at September 11th. If we leave this meeting without a vote to adopt this, then we need to make sure that we do that next Friday, the 18th, so that it can get to the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation. It seems to me before they begin reviewing their applications for round three. So I would say if we do another meeting, it would have to be within the next, you know, first couple of days of next week to have something finalized to go back out to the coalition no later than Thursday for a vote on Friday. Those are the three immediate things.
Yeah.
And I would jump in just to say for people who are there new or haven't been here in a while and wonder what are we doing right this second? Like the coalition by design doesn't take stances so that everybody is welcome to join and you don't have to feel any conflicts of interest. And if you are a government agency or you work for a place that has very strong views or you yourself have views that might not align with some of the conversations that we're having, we don't take stances, so you don't have to have any conflicts. Like that's the goal, is that everyone can come here, we can have an open table, what we call the big tent format. We come, we learn, we collaborate, we communicate, we strategize. And when we have to take or choose to take an opportunity for advocacy that's more tailored with a decision and a request, things like, you know, sanctioned campsites might not be aligned with your personal values and or whatever, and then you may make a decision that attending this meeting is starting to challenge either your agency or yourself in terms of where you align. So when we do have an opportunity to use our collective think tank, we want to take it seriously and we want to open it up to everyone. There's six or eight of us who meet weekly and have email exchanges, and we could have easily done all of this on our own and just say, this is what the coalition believes, but that's the total antithesis of what the coalition should be, which is the person who just showed up today, like that was to introduce yourself, Carrie, and has no idea, like I'm new, like you're just as valuable in your opinion and your voice, and you're just as welcome as some of us who spend the most of our extra time doing extra work on this for the last 3 or 4 years. So that's the goal, and that's why we're doing a big 60-person conversation that has some painstaking technological glitches. In real life, this is so much easier on Zoom without having full administrative controls. It's tough. So what I would suggest in terms of time and our agenda is, Maureen, if you could write question one in the chat with the two options and let people answer in the chat, and then after like 10 minutes, ask question two with the two options and then question three. I think that you don't need to ask another small group. Let's just make that happen now. Like we need to have a separate meeting to wrap up, and then we'll present the wrap up from today and a separate meeting next Friday as well. So I'm gonna make an executive decision on that one. But for the first two questions, if you wanna repeat them and put them in the chat, then we can get people's feedback.
Jan's about to lose her arm.
Yes.
Sorry. I'm having a moment, Jan. Sorry.
You're in the moment. You got the groove. To address Al's point and other people's point, why not have the letter B both unsheltered and sheltered? Points number one and two. The rest of the points in the letter could be rewritten as background or supporting, but don't address just unsheltered. My request is that the population we serve is both sheltered and unsheltered. Al, would you consider that point number one and point number two, and then drop the rest as an option?
Sure.
That doesn't work for me, so I still like asking the question. I think we need the broader strokes.
Well, and would it work in the proposal to refer to the broader items as, refer to them as things that could be included in the plan, such as in that longer list, rather than making it sound like they're required?
I think if it's framed in a way that makes sure that all of the points could be covered by groups who participated, I think that's the point about not having priorities. But some of the things that we're experiencing in our neighborhood, really, I wouldn't want them to be left out because they are significantly potential ways that we could actually do something creative. So the foundation may want to support something like this. And if we say these are things we would like to see supported, that's not the same as saying these are things that must be supported.
So moving forward, Maureen, did you want to put in the chat the questions?
You know, I don't know what the question is now. Okay, here's my first question. Do we want to respond? Yes, we have an invitation. Do we want to respond?
I'm going to assume that you two are going to say yes, so I'm just going to add you to the list anyway. And while we're doing that, I'm going to go ahead and transition to our governmental updates.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. Pierce County was asked to come each week and give an update on our rental assistance program. So ERAP, which is our eviction rental assistance program by the state, is fully up and running. So it's super, super exciting. We have 14 providers with those funds specifically. Nine of them are buy-in for agencies, and a pretty big handful of those are able to serve their own population, so they don't have to take from our referrals. We did that to allow folks to work with people that they're comfortable with and that they already have a guiding relationship with, and so that was a contractual change that the county has implemented through these CARES dollars. So I think that's pretty exciting. Every program pretty much is up and running, either serving their own folks or accepting referrals from our backlog. So that's great. We are still suspended for the moment, but we are very, very quickly getting through our backlog. So hopefully we'll be able to start accepting new applications here in the next couple weeks, but I will keep you posted on that. So as of today, I saw 2,182 applications so far. We're going through and finding folks who are either out of county or out of state who I guess just really liked our program better. I'm not really sure, but we weren't able to serve them. And then we have already paid full rents for 909 people, totaling $1.786 million in rental assistance dollars only. So that does not include operations, nor does that include admin. That is specifically funds to landlords. So we are working through that every day. Two things that we have also changed is I sent out an email to every single applicant in the roster. So I sent out about 9 p.m. last night. I finished 1,600 emails, and folks are sending emails back whether or not they have questions, if they still need assistance. And so I'm just working through those one by one, as well as the homeless team is calling every single client on the list so that we can just let them know, we know it's been a frustrating process. We know you're still waiting, but we still have your application. We are not out of funds. And so we're just reaching that, doing that human contact. And so that has been really relieving for a lot of people. We can also just answer questions. Some folks apply but really only need utility assistance, or some folks have paid their rent, but now they have school questions. And so we're working through all of those kind of nuances and referring folks out. Something else that we've done is Workforce Central came on Wednesday and did a really awesome presentation. So every provider who has rental assistance dollars will be able to connect folks to Workforce Central programs, which is great because they can pay sometimes rent, they can pay utilities, they can also pay that first day of work stuff like boots and tools and that kind of thing. And so that's a direct connection, and folks can just do an email or a phone call and they do a warm handoff to those amazing programs. So all of that has happened in this very short, very, very busy week of a 4-day work week. The $1.786 million is missing two providers from that dollar amount because they were evacuated due to fires. And so they were unable to give an update. And so we're just being patient and understanding that folks are all having their own struggles with the fires and everything that's happening. So that is on that. For CARES, all contracts are fully out there. Everybody's working through the backlog. CARES dollars, they are only working the backlog. They are not doing their own clients at this time. So because they don't have that buy-in for entity eligibility status by the state. So just really lots of moving parts on that. We are also still working very closely, hi Sherry, with hygiene and sanitation. We are extending that contract through December for both Vallejo to provide services at YMCA as well as CMAR. So all of those shelters will still be available through the end of December. So working out those contracts today. Clearly, I'm doing longer than 8-hour days. So if you got an email from me at 9:30 last night, that's just how it is. So I have a very graceful husband who just feeds us and brings me new puppies. So that's great. I got a new puppy today. It's on its way. So I'm very excited. So so that's kind of what we're working on. ESG allocation funds, working out that, as well as really focusing on what that second ESG allocation is going to be.
and just working through our normal process, right? Like coordinated entry NOFA is going to have to come out soon. The normal HHP NOFA is going to have to come out soon. Continuum of care, we're still waiting to hear what HUD's going to do about those funds. Generally, we would have already submitted by now, so we're all getting a little anxious about what that might look like. As well as we have heard potential for a youth homelessness demonstration grant may or may not open this year also. So lots of the normal process has to happen while we're still all in the pandemic response phase. So I'm happy to answer any questions. And if I don't have the answer, I will be sure to bring it back to you next week. So I'm happy to help where I can.
Hey, Valerie, thank you.
Sure.
Can you just go back to the beginning? Mm-hmm. 2,182 applications are still under review?
Yeah, so actually, no, I wrote that down. That's hygiene and sanitation has already been served. So 1,700 is for, my apologies. I wrote very quick notes while y'all were chatting. So I'm sorry. 2,182 hygiene sanitation showers, 1,700 through Vallejo and the rest through CMAR. They average about 125 a week. Applications, we were just over 3,000. We are still working through. 909 have had their rent paid. Everybody else has either been contacted, being contacted, or has been deemed ineligible. Either their rent wasn't late, they weren't in the county, or they were over the annual area median income. So working through those last buckets. But when I pulled up yesterday, we had 1,400 applicants who either were not documented as being contacted yet by a provider, or they just weren't notated yet. So what we found yesterday was some folks have already actually been served, but they weren't properly updated by their service provider. So I am also on my little tiny laptop screen working through all of those Excel spreadsheets and making sure everyone is properly documented. And so we are notating who's received what months of rent. And then we're still taking, like I get a lot of emails in the prevention email inbox about folks who are needing assistance. So we're letting them know that we are currently suspended. More than likely, we will open the first week of October, but then we're digging deeper. Like we know LASA's got funds for City of Tacoma. My understanding is there's also funds out there for City of Lakewood, City of Steilacoom, as well as REACH has $1.2 million for young adults ages 24 and under. So we sent them over 100 referrals that we had waiting in our queue to get them served more quickly. So sharing a little bit of the love as well as a little bit of the responsibility. So, but it's all manual now. Since Almond left, it all has to be done one beautiful application at a time. And so that takes a bulk of my days with great internet, by the way.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, well, if there's any questions for me, shoot me an email, call me. I have multiple eggs, Skype me, whatever. I'm happy to help. I am sitting here probably until about 9 o'clock tonight as well. So let me know.
All right. Well, I did see the health department here, so I'll let them take it away. Manu or Carrie or somebody.
Unmute myself. How's it going? Thanks for having me, and just wanted to share really briefly. I'm about to share just a document of recommendations from the state. Just some recommendations for wildfire smoke and COVID-19 during this really difficult wildfire season. We continue to respond to COVID, but of course, everything is further complicated with wildfires, but I think this document will be really helpful just to provide some, tips and strategies on how to protect yourselves, your neighbors, including our houseless neighbors and your families. So I'll send that to the Coalition Listserv in response. And then as far as other updates, I've just been working with the shelters to continue to coordinate some the mobile testing and immunization clinics, the more we learn. So thank you to all the shelters who have been so great at gathering information, or helping me gather information to inform planning on that. And I think that's it for now. I wanted to say that the wildfire, the other guidance that I'm working on developing is like a toolkit or decision tree related to, COVID-19 and flu, just so that shelters and our service providers have you know, a document handy, an appendix, flow charts or infographics to help guide decision making around COVID and flu. So more to come on that. And I'll just make sure to communicate with folks on how that'll be presented.
Great. So then we didn't put safe parking, but I did remind Rob that we do want to have safe parking as a regular agenda update. I don't know if Jan, if there's any updates for the safe parking subcommittee and the work you guys are doing.
Yes, thank you. Safe parking is moving along. We are now forming two committees. We've been having a wonderful work group committee, which is going to continue. We'll meet again, I think, next Thursday at 2:00. So that's open to everybody. And we are finalizing a funding committee, which will be fewer folks to actually lay eyes on the applications of site requests if a site wants funds for a specific project. So that committee is being formalized right now. And I think that's all I've got. Rob, is there anything that I've missed?
No, I don't think we have any clear first sites lined up quite yet. So that brings us to where I remember we were from the last meeting.
Right. Colin is in discussion with several folks who are interested. And we are, we finalized our draft for site application. So if a site wants to be considered for money, we've had a great discussion at our last open meeting, and we finalized the draft of the application that a site would submit.
Awesome. I'm gonna break the agenda for 5 minutes I wanted to take an opportunity before I hand it back off to Maureen to talk about advocacy to share the Coalition's resource website. If you didn't know, we had one. It's called PierceCountyResources.com, and I can put that in the chat, but let me see if I can share my screen for a second. And I just want to walk you guys through a few things. It's already on there. If you've been using it, awesome. If you're not, I want to share it with you, as well as some of our goals to update it and how Comprehensive is also using it to help coordinate some of our outreach efforts. So hopefully you guys can see my screen. Great, thanks Rob for confirming that. Let me move around a bit. So this is the website that Comprehensive operates, but it's for the Coalition, and we have some information on here for the Coalition. And I wanted to start up here at the buttons. Under contact, if nothing else, you click the contact button and you'll get information. This is really, are you an agency that has a resource, or is your resource in here, or do you know about a resource that we're not using? And this would help us to update it. And if you could just fill out the recommendation information here, if you have it, or if you're the person, that would be helpful. There's a lot of information here that we would preferably collect from the agency themselves. But if it's not you, then it could be helpful to direct us in the right direction. But we try to categorize them. And every time you click on one of those buttons, it really helps us to make it filter better. So that's just a real quick, we are trying to update this. The next one is everybody who has been on the Coalition website at one point or another, we have them considered what we call members. So if you hear of an agency and you want to know about them, all of the agencies that have one time either presented at the Coalition are on the PC website. Their name is here with a link to their website. So that's just one-stop shopping for you. If you're looking for an agency, I can't remember the name of them. They were something like Ministries, and then you could come here and look in alphabetical order. Oh, Associated Ministries, click on it and go to their website. So ideally for new clinicians, it could be helpful. You don't have to remember every website that exists. We have them here. The next kind of fun part that we've added, our agency comp as part of our homeless outreach strategy to address the folks living in encampments. We built what's called a mobile clinic. I'm really proud of Sonia, our manager, and the team that works on that for building this. So we used to do referrals like 311, and we would go to different outreaches. And while we still do all of that for our positive interactions and outreach grants, we found it a little bit easier to have site locations for the larger encampments. And we have a big, 13 passenger van that we fill up with supplies, and we go out in groups. And this is our current schedule. We have these places set in stone right now, and we update this weekly. So every Monday at 1 o'clock, we're going to the encampment on 19th and Orchard and et cetera, et cetera. If you're like Maureen and you know all the encampments that are happening all the places every day, we do have a request here, encampment suggestion. This is not a one client on the corner. We have a phone number for that, and I'll show you that later. But if there's a legitimate tent camping site that you would like us to add to our outreach efforts, this is the information you can fill out, and it gets emailed to us. But here's the information from the sites that we go to right now for our coordinated outreach clinic for homeless services. And here's our phone number as well on the website that is there. And then the last button before I actually show you the resources is, I looked at this thing, it's so complicated, I don't know, I can't find what I'm looking for, I just need help. If this is really good for the client themselves who's looking for a resource that they couldn't find, if you fill this out, or the client does, or call this number, an automated email with all the information that's put in here is sent to my whole team, my whole homeless outreach team. And we get an email, I'd say at least once a week, of a person who says, I found the website, I'm living under a bridge, or I'm living in my car, or whatever, and then give us contact info and we follow up with them. So again, a little bit more one-stop shopping on the client end. And now the real reason why we have this resource website is the resources. So it's supposed to be self-directed, but of course, if you're a case manager, you can operate it yourself. You choose resources, and then kind of who are you? I'll just pick a male, age range, if you would like. And we're gonna add some other buttons as well for shelter, but then you'll get an interactive map. It'll take a minute to update with a whole bunch of categories that you can filter by. So I'll just pick shelters here to make my life easier, except for it's not the first one. And then you'll get kind of an interactive map, and you can zoom in to the location. And if you pick a shelter that you're looking for, you click on it, and then you'll get the information that's showed here with a link to their website. This is the stability site. But you can look down here. We're trying our best to open it, update it, look through it, keep ourselves, but it takes a lot of time, and COVID changes happen and we don't know about them. It's all self-directed, self-managed. So we don't have, like, if you change something on your website, it doesn't automatically update what we're doing here. So I just wanted to make sure that people knew about it. One of the goals that we had a long time ago was to make our resource community as small as possible so everyone can navigate it. Comp has started the process. We put this together, and it's a normal Squarespace site that we just put together, and we're paying for it. And I want to make sure that it's useful. If you weren't aware of it, awesome. Go take a look and try to familiarize yourself. But I'll say at least once a month, I'll be in a meeting, either the coalition, the COC, or something else. And the answer is, you know what we need? We need like a database with all the resources. And I was like, I'm paying for it, and I'm dedicating staff to managing it. So if we're not using it, we don't need it, it's not valuable. I want to stop doing both of those things, stop paying for it and stop having a staff manage it. But if it is valuable and we can work together to keep this up to date, I'm asking for a little help, just looking through it and helping like update things, or if anybody else has some desire to do some outreach for us, we have a survey that we send out periodically. But as you know, anytime we send stuff out, we don't get any feedback. So we actually have to call like each provider. And so it takes a lot of time to update it. We don't do a good enough job, but I'm just gonna stop there and hand off to Maureen. Maybe if there's any questions about the resource website, I am putting it in the chat here. And if there's any questions, I can answer real quick. If not, I'll let Maureen jump in with the legislative advocacy updates.
Okay, thanks. Before we do that, can we tie up the response to the Greater Tacoma Community Foundation?
So not as many folks voted in this, or provided feedback as we were chatting and going on with the meeting for the second question. The first question, we had 21 of the folks in the room say yes to responding to the opportunity. We had, at my last count, 8 people say yes to focusing on the first 2 items and making the rest of the items in the proposal be listed as items, services such as, rather than required. So essentially, my takeaway would be those 2 questions, we have positive feedback on both. what I guess my question to you, Maureen, is, are those the last questions we need to ask to move forward, or is there a third question we need to pose to the group?
I think the other one is, Jan asked for a small meeting. Rob, I think you followed by saying that this conversation would need to serve. How do people want to go forward? If one option is, I can redraft, and anybody who wants to see the new draft, can contact me. You all have my email, and I'll send it to you.
Yeah, I think moving along, and it was actually James who proposed we do this on a quicker time scale, but I think doing that would make more sense rather than trying to schedule another meeting.
Okay. So I will redraft. I'll get something out to anybody who asks to see a copy of it, and we'll bring a final to, we'll go out to the coalition Thursday and for a up or down vote on Friday. Okay?
That's good.
Sounds all right, good. Thank you. Okay, now, so what we don't know, what we do know and what we don't know, it appears that while we've been talking, the Tacoma, city of Tacoma has been clearing an encampment at People's Park. I have that from an email from somebody. I don't know what outreach was done. I don't know if all of those folks went to shelter. If they did, I don't know how they did it. But that's to start us off. The city of Tacoma is on the 15th, which is next Tuesday, will be its monthly community forum, which is the only opportunity the public has to speak on anything. Otherwise, it's limited to certain agenda items. So because it's expected that there will be a number of issues that will be addressed by many people, remember that you can always email. And I'll send out over the weekend, I'll send out the link for the city clerk, and you can address your comments to the entire council in that way. The coalition itself will not comment. This is going to be up to individuals and individual organizations. My understanding is that the city is presenting at the study session on the 15th. It's something about its homelessness strategy, but I don't know, and I haven't seen anything. And in one, by Monday, hopefully, I'm actually going to have a computer new enough to now again access the city's agenda, which hasn't been the case for the last several months. So that's the city. The second thing, for the safe parking folks and everybody else, if you've been watching the news on the Red Cross response and emergency management responses to the fires, the evacuees from the fires, guess what they're setting up? Safe vehicle parking places. That's where they're delivering services. And guess what they're using for shelters? Hotel rooms. Until they absolutely run out, they're going to Olympia, they're going any place they can from the, you know, Pierce County area. So one of my thoughts is that now that safe parking has become acceptable because housed people are using it under the Red Cross, under emergency management protocols, then maybe it will become easier for people who are not housed to be able to use it. So I think that's something. And also I think we should get from, you know, obviously not today, but as we get through the fire crises, a conversation with the Red Cross about how they handled volunteers, how they trained them, who they sent out, the emergency management people, to these vehicle parking areas, because they asked people to do that. And they're also doing it in huge numbers in Oregon. But Oregon's a long way from having fires under control. I mean, they've got 500,000 people under evacuation orders. So now, the federal government, your friendly federal government, does not appear that it will act on any additional funding to relieve any part of the COVID crisis, which is, just seems incomprehensible. I expect that, or not me, I mean, people who know things, expect that the president will do some things by executive order, but we don't know what. and we don't know what the unintended consequences of anything might be. All I can say is stay tuned. I don't have any update on the governor's group that's meeting around eviction policy. Hopefully by next Friday, I would think we'd have something. I also don't have an update on the unlawful detainer mediation pilot, which is supposed to start next week. So again, hopefully we'll have something. I did send out a report out on the listserv that's all about eviction defense resources that I'm aware of. So please take a look. Please send changes. James, I'm not going to try and put it in your resource page. Somebody else can figure some of this out. That was just what I happened to know. Prompted by Matt Driscoll's a piece in the News Tribune, when I did a link to that, which is about the loophole that if your landlord is, your property owner is selling the property or intends to move into it, themselves or their family into it, that is a quote legal eviction. And just not every landlord, every property manager is ethical. And not everyone is aware of the eagerness of the Washington State Attorney General to follow up on all complaints. So I put that link in too. So if you've got folks, I mean, just really as many people, outreach workers on this call, people who are on supportive services, medical folks, whomever you are, as every time you hear somebody who is housed, who is nervous about their housing, reach out to those legal resources and try and figure out a way to keep people housed unless they're moving to housing that is better for them. We just got to keep them housed. And then at the other end, we've got to bump up rapid rehousing so that people get through faster and bump up diversion so people get through any kind of system we've got faster and get housed. I don't know what else to do. We're not going to hotel our room out of this coming crisis. And God only knows what happens on January 1st. At least we have a little time in terms of the eviction moratoria. So the last thing is that since it wasn't enough to try and figure out a response to Greater Tacoma Community Foundation, what that activity prompted was a return to a conversation that many people in this group have had over the past few years. The coalition is amazing. The part that's hard, as we've just gone through in painful process, is our inability to actually make a decision as a coalition, because we don't have a structure that provides that. So a few of us have been talking, and we have gone back to, and Garrett, I think his brain cleared. And so he actually proposed a structure for a 501c3 that neither Rob Huff nor I, in our wisdom, can locate in our box of files and put in the chat, but which I will email to the listserv following this meeting today. You will have it early afternoon. It says draft all over it. I think we're on version 1.2. It is an upside down organizational chart. The executive board is the bottom of the page, and it moves up toward the proposed sort of key activities, one being these weekly coalition meetings, staffing for them, another being an advocacy and policy division that would have a way to take positions, another being a speakers bureau of people who have lived experience, either recently or currently, people who are experiencing or have experienced homelessness. Another being a relationship with the continuum of care. and another being administrative support for the Tacoma Tenants Organizing Committee. This is not meant to be the end result. This is like the letter to Tacoma, Greater Tacoma Community Foundation is meant to be a way to begin a discussion or decide not to begin a discussion, either way. And so apologies for not having it in my box, but promises that it will go out on the listserv following this meeting. Our suggestion is that comments go to info@pchomeless.org. Garrett will watch those comments and we'll figure out how to do it. It is not a closed process. It's just something it felt it was time to bring forward in a more focused way. It, including your comments, I'd like to participate in this. I think there should be a working committee. I don't think we should do this. Whatever it is that's important to you, please take time to do it. So that's what I know. Thank you. As always, thanks for letting me do this.
Well, all right. I think we've covered a lot today and we've come to the end of our agenda. This also, we like to save space for anything of the good of the order or to give people a chance to introduce themselves or network if they have an announcement.
Hello there, James. This is Pam from Molina Healthcare.
Hey, Pam.
Hi. I'm thinking that Sarah Irish will be attending the meetings because this is my last day working with Molina. I'm retiring today. So I think I know. I'm so excited. Yeah. Well, I'm going to practice some self-care, which this brings me to what I'd like to talk about is we forget that we all need self-care and we're trying to help others. So let's make sure that we take care of ourselves and be cognizant of what can wear us down. So anyway, yeah, so I won't be attending as Molina, but when I can, I will attend. And so Sarah Irish is the one from Molina that would be taking over any committees or spots. And so I want to thank everybody for always being there. And I've always loved being part of the Pierce County Homeless Coalition. So thank you again.
We love you too, Pam.
Thank you.
Bye, Pam.
Bye, Pam.
Bye.
I want to do a quick update. I hate coming at the tail end of that. But quick update, I'll send out a flyer for our shower programs. The YMCA has reopened their locations. So we've reduced our locations from Lakewood, Puyallup, and Tacoma to exclusively Tacoma on Market Street and the Puyallup location. We've reduced hours from 25 hours a week, unfortunately, to 12 hours a week. So the schedule is Monday, Wednesday, Friday in Tacoma from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. and Tuesday and Thursday in Puyallup from 7:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. We were really apprehensive about the evening schedule, but our week this week has been good. We had 36 participants, I believe, on Thursday. So, yay.
I kind of had a question. I don't know if this is a good time. I noticed people were making comments on social media about the wildfires happening in encampments and people thinking that a lot of the wildfires are caused by arson. I just relating it to the homeless population, how would you guys best recommend going about that conversation with someone who already has that judgment on homeless people? I don't know if you had any advice.
Well, I hadn't actually heard that as one of the theories being floated. Of course, there have been a couple of people arrested for starting fires or attempting to start fires. But I actually haven't heard that floated as one of the causes of particular fires.
I saw it in the news. Someone from, I believe, Tacoma Fire Department said it was started in an encampment near the lumber yard. So I have not confirmed. So that is what the media is put out so far.
Lovely.
Is that the one in Lakewood?
Maureen, you know I get lost every time I leave this house. I have no idea.
That's the only Yellow Hills one. I'm sorry.
Well, no, Tacoma. The one in South Tacoma.
Yeah. Yeah, it was in supposedly in an encampment. Now, does that mean like a person? Because, you know, encampment means something very different to a lot of people. But that's, I had heard the same thing. I think my husband woke me up to read me the news article like at one this morning. So, yeah.
I mean, it's safe to say that I wouldn't necessarily assume that people who are living outdoors are getting the alerts about fire conditions, and it's quite possible somebody who's using a campfire to cook could lose control of it, just like people happens when people camp and leave a fire unattended. So, you know, there's that. I hadn't heard anything about a theory that people who are living outdoors are intentionally setting fires.
We've had two tent fires on our block in the last 30 days. One of them was intentional. The other was someone cooking inside their tent. But I think, I guess in response, what I'm hearing in the question is, how do we respond to this and say, this is, you know, people, there are all kinds of people who start fires. There are all kinds of people who, during outdoor activities, fires result. There's the whole gender reveal crap that happened. I think the answer is it's no worse for someone who is camping out. In fact, there might be a little more understandable reason for a fire starting when someone is living outdoors than someone doing a gender reveal party. So I think what I wouldn't stand up there and say, no, someone who's without a home would never intentionally start a fire, because I know that isn't true. We've had several in our history here of arson by people who were feeling pretty desperate. But I think it's really important to say that's not most people who are without homes. And so I guess in answer to Janie's question, I would just say people without homes are no more uniform than the people who are housed. They're all kinds of people.
Or also the people that are smoking in their cars and they just flick their butts out of the window. Those are the ones that also start fires, and they don't get held accountable for their actions.
Thank you. Gotta go.
James, do you want to invite people to stay on if they're interested? And in
next week? For those that are still here, thank you. And again, congratulations, Pam, and we'll miss you. And I'm excited for you, and you're always welcome to keep joining in. Matter of fact, some people who are retired spend more time at the Coalition, so I just want to throw that out there. But for the those that are starting to log off, we do meet right after. We just leave the Zoom meeting open so we can chat about what's on the agenda for next week and different tasks to do and follow up and debrief. So if you're interested to either listen in on some of us talk it out or to participate and assist, that would be great. If you're still here, you're going to listen to us chatting about what's on the agenda for next week.
So 5 minutes. You want to take 5 minutes?
If that works, I'm going to take five, but people can still sit and chat. But see some folks soon and have a good weekend.
Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, thanks for joining.